the Witchcrafty Wellness Podcast, where magic meets everyday life. I'm your host, Robin, and in today's episode, we dive into the transformative journey of Shay, an energy transmutation master in the realm of the Akashic Records, a friend and light seeker, and a resilient soul who not only escaped the clutches of addiction and abuse, but discovered the profound power of love in her path to recovery. Shay, thank you for joining us. Can you share a glimpse of your early struggles with addiction and abuse?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad to be here. I just want to put that in there. So when I was, the early struggle. So I started really using drugs heavy when I was 15 years old. Just a background, like my mom put me into school early. So in grade 10, I was 15. I was the youngest person still at my school. I just turned 15. And I had always struggled to make like a deep connection with the children around me. And so I was quite lonely. And then my first friend I ever made, my mom bought me a cell phone, like for God knows what reason. I had no one to call but her, which she probably loved. But then I got my cell phone and I just started like asking random people, like, put your number in here. So I got this girl, Brittany's number, and then she smoked a ton of weed. And then that was kind of it. So in order to like be her friend, I started smoking weed. Like, and when I'm saying like smoking weed, I'm not talking about like a joint once in a while. I'm talking about like two paper joints on my lunch break. Like I was probably, you know, a quarter a week with this girl. She was from BC. She moved away. But the thing is, I had made a bunch of like quote unquote friends in the smoke pit, and they started taking pressed ecstasy, which is like no longer, I think, even available. But, and then I just started taking ecstasy. So my first experience with that, I was 15 in math class. It was during an exam. I took my shirt off and started a water fight in the middle of the class, got suspended. Like, the only thing I really remember is how bright the lights were and like pressing my naked-ish torso up against the cold lockers because I was so warm.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And then the vice principal was trying to like hold me in the office, and I literally jumped the office desk and ran out the front door and just ran away. So that was like day one. And then I just was, I guess, hooked after that. Like all the people I knew were doing it, and like, so I just skip class, go to art, and like take tons of ecstasy and like draw these wild maps and like fractalations and stuff, until I like dropped out in grade 11. And then like fast forward 10 years, I went to school to be a hairstylist. And if you know anything about hairstylists, like this is maybe a generalization, but like cocaine and partying is rampant in that world. So in order to fit in there, I started doing piles of cocaine. I think at my worst, I was doing like an 8-ball a day, which is a lot. So like in retrospect, I'm like, oh my God, like, how did I survive that truly? And then towards the end of my journey, I had a friend who was a chemist. He would make drugs and then I would test them out. So I think that that was really around the time when my brain got a bit scrambly, like truly, other than the fact that I like was hanging out with, you know, quote unquote bad people. You know, I really always had a thing for the underdogs because I saw the world through like a hierarchy, and I didn't think the people that were, you know, like popular and rich and all this stuff, I didn't think that they would accept me. And so my habits and those belief systems just like got ingrained over time. I put myself in like a lot of very dangerous situations. And then when I turned 25, it was after a particularly intense festival weekend. Like, and my moods were all over the place. Like, I couldn't get out of bed without doing a line at like 7 in the morning. I was drinking like a Mickey of vodka at night to be able to sleep because I was all like coked out during the day. And then I just woke up on my 20, like a week from my 25th birthday. And I was like, okay, Shay, you got to get sober or you have to move downtown and just like start shooting heroin because we can't be standing on this fence anymore. Like, commit or don't.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to try to get sober. If I don't make it a year, because at the time I didn't think I had a problem. I just thought I had like bad habits, bad friends, things that just like snowballed out of control. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do a year. And if I can't do a year, I'm going to go to rehab or like treatment. I made it 8 months, relapsed. So I went to treatment and then, yeah. And then I just like, it's been 10 years since that timeline, since that moment. And even when I went to treatment, I went to like prehab, I call it. So you go, they do an assessment. They tell you if they think that you're at risk, if you should go away to like sleepaway rehab. But they said no, which I think was a bad idea, to be honest. Like, I should have gone because I just... it was just me. Like, I just white knuckled it. I hated AA. Like, I didn't like the, you know, to each their own. Like, I know many people that AA have like really helped, but I found there was like a lot of judgment because at NA, Narcotics Anonymous, there was a lot of people who were like way worse off than me. So when I was there, my brain was like, you're not an addict. Like, look at these people. They've thrown their whole life away. You've never somehow missed a phone payment, which like in my mind was just like, I was like, yeah, I still got it, you know, like look at me pay the bill. So like and at AA there was like a lot of judgment because it was, I never really had a problem with alcohol. I don't drink now because it really messes with like my brain. Like, it takes me back to an emotional place, like a lot of rage, a lot of anger. Which I think can be healthy, but not when it's chemically forced and induced, right? Just like the lowering of my vibration. Again, to each their own, do what you got to do. But for me, it's not the vibe. And yeah, and then I think that for a long time, self-hatred and shame and like guilt, the belief that I was a bad person. Cause like when you get sober and your brain and your body releases all these memories that you forgot about. So I remembered like a lot of trigger warning, sexual abuse. I had a lot of boyfriends that were like seriously physically abused. I was held in someone's basement once for like only 2 hours, but at the time it was like, oh God, like this is terrifying. And so there was just like a lot that had to be confronted, coupled with like relearning how to just be like a human, because over my formative years, I just like partied and did drugs and like tricked old men into like doing things for me. So I never, you know, like I never really paid my full rent. I never even paid the full amount for my drugs, like meals. For a while, every meal I would have a different date, like for years. I never paid for my, like I never really did any of that stuff. And like, let alone taxes and just like, right? My phone bill was really all I held on to for whatever reason. I probably needed it to get drugs. So I was like, can't let the phone bill like lapse, you know? So yeah, and then I realized a couple years in, about 5 years in, that I was coming at it from a place of like such self-hatred and that I was broken. I was always looking, I thought that there would just be like a switch, like if I could just find the one wound that caused me to, you know, attract men that wanted to abuse me, and like, I could just find it, then I would like switch it and everything would be chill. I would be like a normal person who could just like handle life based on what society, you know, like all these programs. I was just like, okay, I'm gonna like, but eventually I realized like, well, actually I didn't even realize it. I had a bunch of therapists, all of them I had to fire because they just pushed the boundaries of like what was appropriate. And then essentially that's when I found Akashic Records. Cause I was just desperate. I was like, I need help. Like, I can't get out of bed. I'm so depressed. Like, I'm still meeting men that are trash, to be honest. No offense to them if they're listening, but you're trash. And this like still a lot of abuse, more like mental and verbal, emotional. Yeah. And then eventually when I found Akashic Records, I just realized like, the only way that true change can stick is through like loving yourself and accepting yourself unconditionally, which again has been a challenging process. And that's kind of like where I've been working at it for the last 5 years since that realization.
I know that you said that you had a moment where you were like, I either have to get help or I have to, you know, go and just like fully commit to this life. What exactly caused you to have that realization and to realize that true growth can only come from love and not shame?
Well, the initial, like when I had that black and white thinking, like, okay, it's heroin or sobriety. Honestly, I'm not really, I think that I knew that there was more to life, which is what really annoyed me. And that's like my innate curiosity is what pushed me. It wasn't even like, it's not that I felt worthy or even deserving of like a better life. I just knew it was possible. So I was like, okay. Because I knew if I started doing heroin, that was it. Like, I'm not coming off of that at no point, you know, like I knew that about myself. So there was that moment. And around that time, I was going to Calgary counseling and I had this woman and she asked me this. She asked me a question. She said, well, why are you here? And I was like, oh, well, XYZ, like all this stuff has been happening. I don't know. Kind of like my emotions were all over the place. So I was like, I'm not sure what's happening. And she said, well, there must be like love and light inside you. Otherwise you wouldn't come here because many people who are even like less far down the rabbit hole wouldn't even bother. So what is it about you or like, you know, internally that wants to get well? And I was like, oh, and I think when she said that, it like planted a seed and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good point. Like, and that even just ruminating on that question allowed me to be like, okay. And then the catalyst for the, like further down the road, the 5 year mark was just the changes I was trying to make just weren't changing. Like I had a lot of lingering habits and like biochemically, there's this thing they call PAWS, post-acute withdrawal syndrome, where your brain chemistry is trying to like do it on its own now after years of having quote unquote assistance from outside sources for serotonin and dopamine and like blah, whatever. Right. And so I kind of forgot about that. And they say it's half the amount of time that you're a drug addict. So at the 5 year mark, I almost, it's like my brain was like, hey, remember about this, like post-acute withdrawal syndrome. And I was like, oh yeah. And then I noticed like the changes weren't changing. There was still like a lot of self-worth and all these pieces around self-love and like that I just weren't clicking. And then I just realized like, okay, in order to, I just kind of like, I realized the changes I was trying to make was to prove that I wasn't a drug addict loser. And I instead focused on just purely being like, okay, self-love is all that I am going to work on right now for me if my external world changes, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't matter. Because right now, my relationship with myself is all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That is such a powerful revelation. I feel like anyone that's listening is just going to be like, oh, I just have to do that one piece. Like, just let all the rest go. Like, I feel like that is a really powerful gift that you've just given to the listener. So thank you for that. So when you were in that, how did you then transition from that place of like, okay, I'm going to focus on self-love, I'm going to overcome this addiction piece. How did you transition from that into being an Akashic Records reader? Like where was the pieces that fell into place for that?
So first I really got into, oh, I can't even remember his name now, but the guy who wrote the Four Agreements.
Ah, yes.
That
I don't gentleman. Remember his name, but I do know who
Me
you're
too.
Talking about.
I'm drawing a serious blank. He has another book called The Mastery of Love. So I was reading that and my friend gifted it to me. And then around this time, I had heard like little blips about the Akashic Records. I was doing tarot readings and like, you know, intuitive stuff, moon magic, la la la, at the time. And then I was working in a diner and randomly this girl who's now one of my very best friends, Jen, she came up to me and she was like, just the first time we met, she's like, you'll never guess what happened. Like I had this crazy reading, la la la. And so automatically I was like, okay, I'm in. Cause I was still learning. And I mean, the process of changing your brain chemistry and your natural thought process into like thoughts of love when you had kind of like lingering shame of who you are, even at before I did drugs, right? Like when I was a kid, don't, like I just thought there's always something wrong with me. So I went for this reading and it truly blew my mind. And then the woman I had the reading from, she had like a terrible accident with her family and stopped doing readings. So I was on the hunt for an Akashic Record reader. And I'm very much a person who likes referrals personally, because I like to know like someone else has gotten results. I'm not very trusting when I just like find a stranger off the internet and they're like, oh, I do this. I'm better now. But like at that time, I was very like cautious and nervous, still like untrusting of people. So then I found my mentor, Heather. She did like a few readings for me. And one night I had a dream that I was sitting at her feet. She was wearing this like white outfit and this like white turban. We were doing Kundalini yoga as well at the time. And I knew in the dream I was her student. And so when I woke up, I reached out to her and I was like, oh, do you take like mentorees? Do you teach Akashic Records? Because I had this dream. And she's like, yeah. She's like, let me check in with my guides. Then a couple of days later, she was like, yeah, like I'm meant to mentor you. So just we'll set up times for you to receive all these like attunements. We did a bunch of Reiki and stuff. And then she's like, I'll teach you Akashic Records. And that was it. Cause I really noticed, like I have a therapist. Okay. And I just want to preface this by saying no shade to therapists or anything like that. But my experience was that therapists were like not very good, that they didn't, in my experience, help long term. Like a lot of the realizations I had around self-love, forgiveness, all these pieces, those things came to me on their own. I never had a therapist that was like, we need to do like inner child work. Mm-hmm. We need to work on this. We need to look at this. Like I had, and I saw like, I've had many therapists and I've seen them like once a week kind of vibes. But when I started having Akashic Record readings more often is when I really noticed actual changes in my reality. So once I realized that, I was like, okay, I got to get in on this. Like I hyper fixated on it. I read so many books, like crushed 8 books in like a weekend or something. And then, yeah, that's kind of how it unfolded.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it's common for, at least in my world and the people that I have come to know, like, I feel like it's really common for you know, AKA Western medicine. So, you know, your psychologists and your doctors and this type of thing, that there's like, they almost fall a little bit short of what that you need. And so having someone that has like a really diverse background. So if you're like finding a psychologist that has a diverse background and can give you those extra pieces, sometimes that can be all it takes, right? Or, you know, going the alternative route can be supportive as well. So in your experience, how would you say then that love plays a role in sustaining personal growth and maintaining a positive mindset?
Oh, good question. Love is, this is what I think, that when you come from a place of love, then you can make habits that stick, because we're always going to take a step back. Like, it's not like you know, you decide today, I'm going to X, Y, Z, move forward, and you don't ever take, like, have a little stumble here and there, you know? And I think with love and therefore compassion, you can look at yourself when you make these stumbling moments, or maybe you take a step back into an old mindset for a moment, or there's an old spiral that comes forward, an old pattern, and you can say, okay, you can look at it and react with compassion, which almost, like, in my experience, closes the cycle and allows you to move forward. But when you come from a place of like, oh, I hate myself, I'm broken, I have to change, when you have a stumbling moment, you look at it and you think maybe like, oh, I'm so stupid, I can't do anything. Like, look, I'm trying so hard, nothing's working, I'm hopeless. And then you just throw it all out the window and return to your automatic programming. Because if there's one thing that I have recently more been diving into, it's like the quote unquote science, or like just science, I guess, of neuroplasticity and how the brain works. Change, because the truth is, like, you can't just ignore that piece. When you understand how the brain works, you can show up with more compassion for yourself and be like, oh yeah, right, I have this human operating system, I'm on this planet during this time in this, like, you know, meat computer, and you know, you have to know that, like, how autopilot works, how these thoughts work, like, what does it take to truly make the changes moment by moment and have that compassion for yourself. Otherwise, you're always in the vibration of like lack, fear, and I'm broken. And then nothing really, it just makes change so hard, because you're like, okay, say for example, I'm like, okay, I'm working on my self-worth and my boundaries, but then it's Christmas and I mess my boundaries up, because, you know, family is like the big boss of boundaries, in my opinion, you know, like final boss in the video game is like your family, especially like your mother, you know, we're born, there's like that connection always. If I come from it from a place of like, oh my God, like, what were you thinking? We've been working so hard. Like, you messed everything up. You haven't learned anything, you moron, or like whatever thoughts could come up for anybody. Those are just like thoughts I'm sure I've had, versus like, okay, you know, we didn't do so great at this, but next time we'll do better. Let's just like look at the, you know, the moments in which we could have made a different decision and look with love, like, how am I going to be able to change this in the future? And then also look and say like, okay, maybe, you know, our aunt who always wants to like give us a kiss on the cheek and we don't like it, but we never say anything. Like, how can I, like, you know, see things from her perspective? How can I, like, and we can make that compassionate analyzation and then trust with love that we're going to make a new decision, instead of being like, oh, well, I have to start from scratch because obviously I didn't learn anything. And then you're kind of stuck even in the cycle of relearning over and over, because the negativity just keeps you in that loop. My experience, I guess.
100%. 100%. I love what you said about family being the boss at the end of the video game, because I feel like that's very true. And often people will throw away all of the work that they've done on themselves when they go and see family, because they're like, well, clearly, like, this is not working for me. Clearly I'm bad at this. But it takes those really small steps, those really small habits to make a difference. So I love that. Shay, your journey is truly, truly inspiring. As we conclude, is there any other advice that you would offer to people listening that maybe are currently facing their own battles of addiction or abuse, or maybe they know someone who's facing those battles as well?
Absolutely. There's actually two things I would say. One is get help, outside help. Sure, you might have people in your life who want to help you, but you need help from people who have been there, because they're going to know the individual struggles and what they look like. And also, I think that there's just something about like safety and trust when we know somebody has already walked the path and survived it. And then the second thing would be not to discount the small moments, because I think a lot of people, myself included, this is like literally coming from experience, you're looking for these big moments. And so you don't realize that like the magic, the change, the like little bits of love are hidden in the smaller moments. Like that's truly where the magic happens. Yeah, you could have a big like something happens. For me, a lot of things had to happen that way back in the day, because otherwise I needed a neon sign, because otherwise I was just like, ah, la, like not paying attention. But if you can look for the small moments and celebrate the small moments, I think you'll really move a lot faster than if you're always like, oh, it doesn't matter unless it's a big, like, oh, you know, oh, I don't even know the words. I only know like the energy, the words aren't coming. But yeah, the small moments are, like, celebrate your small wins, because once you start celebrating yourself, like, then you start to really, especially if you're somebody who's made a lot of mistakes, quote unquote, or you feel that way about yourself, I find the little celebrations allow you to like build a new foundation that is within trust, and then naturally your self-belief and everything just really snowballs in such a positive way when you're celebrating these tiny moments instead of only big moments.
I love that. I love that. I'm sure that will help some of our listeners. I appreciate you coming on today. Just to wrap up today's episode, could you let our listeners know where they can find you if they want to check out your offerings, your Akashic readings, or maybe talk to you more about your journey?
Yeah, I'm most active on Instagram, to be honest. I do have a Facebook, but like, please don't reach out to me on there simply because I forget about it for months on end, to be honest. So my Instagram is @ShayCarnegie. And then you can just always send me a DM, or you could just email me. My email is ShayCarnegie@gmail.com. Those are hilariously like the easiest way to get a hold of me.
Thank you for joining us on the Witchcrafty Wellness Podcast. Shay's story serves as a testament to the transformative power of love. Again, if you have any questions or you want to share your story, reach out to us on social media. Our information and Shay's information will be in the description of the podcast episode. And until next time, stay enchanted, my friends.